Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Explain It To Me. I'm your host, Dr. Bilicota. I'm a board certified neurologist and epileptologist. Today we will be talking about ischemic stroke. Unfortunately, strokes are a common neurological condition. There are two different types of strokes. There are ischemic strokes and hemorrhagic strokes. Ischemic strokes are due to blood clots that disrupt blood flow to the brain, whereas a hemorrhagic stroke are basically what we call bloody strokes, strokes that are caused by having blood in the brain. This can be due to a variety of things, from aneurysmal bursts to uncontrolled hypertension. We'll talk about hemorrhagic strokes in further detail in a different episode, but today let's talk about ischemic strokes. Now, ischemic strokes are the more common type of strokes. I know I mentioned that it was due to a blood clot disrupting blood flow to the brain. Well, what exactly causes there to be a blood clot in the brain vessels? We know the brain gets its blood flow from further downstream, meaning your circulatory system that supplies blood to your whole body is well connected, which means the blood that's in your legs goes to your heart, that goes out to your lungs, that can get pumped up to your brain. So all this blood is just circling around. At some point during that circling around, a clot has been formed, and that clot can get lodged up in the blood vessels of the brain. Now, the blood vessels to the brain are sensitive blood vessels. They're a lot smaller than something you'd see like in your pelvis, for instance. And because they're small and narrow, those blood clots can get caught a little more quickly than if they were in bigger vessels, and that's what leads to a stroke. So there are three different ways, or you know, maybe even four different ways that a blood clot can get up to your brain. One, you have a local blood vessel that's blocked, meaning the actual blood vessels feeding the brain are blocked. How does that happen? Usually that happens if you have conditions that predilect you to having blood clots, such as some autoimmune conditions, such as certain hematological conditions. That's one thing. But if you're someone without any of that, the most common cause for having blood flow obstructed to the brain due to a local clot is due to atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis is generally what we call plaque buildup in the blood vessels. Just like this can happen in your heart vessels, it can happen in your brain vessels as well. The biggest culprit for this is lifestyle, diet, smoking, drinking, high fat, high cholesterol type diets will do this. So that's one way to get a blood clot up to your brain. The second way is what we call an embolism. An embolism is where you have a blood clot from elsewhere in the body that travels up to the brain. Like I said, you know, the blood vessels that are in the lower part of your body are a lot bigger than the ones that are in your brain. So let's say you have a blood clot in your calf, something that we call a deep vein thrombosis. Sometimes if it gets big enough, your calf will get big and swell, but oftentimes these can be small and we don't notice that they're there. So if you have a lifestyle where you're sitting down a lot and you're not moving that blood as much, that blood can sit around in your calves and create a clot, right? So often when these are really small, they sometimes get pumped up because this is, again, cycling blood. This is basic physiology. Think of it as plumbing. This blood clot can travel upstairs and get lodged in your brain. So that's one way. Another way is an embolism from your heart. So in patients that do have cardiac conditions such as atrial fibrillations and other heart arrhythmias, some of them are on blood thinners, but some of them aren't. And a lot of them don't even know that this is going on, which is why primary care checkups are important. But if you do have a blood clot sitting in your heart from an abnormal heart rhythm, that can also get dislodged and travel up to the brain. Now, a third way of having a blood clot to your brain is what we call cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. This is a whole another chapter that can be covered, but basically the nitty gritty of this is we have venous sinuses in our brain that drain our blood. So we have the arteries that supply the fresh blood and the venous system that drains that blood. brings it back to the lungs, and then the blood just gets cycled. In general, veins drain and arteries supply. So we have cerebral veins as well. Now, those can also get clogged up, but you have to have specific circumstances where that happens. One, you have to have a condition that makes you more prone to having blood clots in your venous sinuses. If you are someone who's pregnant, high estrogen levels, if you're a smoker, lifestyle, that can do it. Another big one is having intracranial hypertension sometimes can put pressures on the dural venous sinuses and create blood clots. So those are all risk factors for having that. Again, this is very specific and it's not as common as the first two that we discussed. Lastly, and this again is an interesting thing because it's not specifically a blood clot that travels up to the brain and deprives it of oxygen. It's actually what we call systemic hypoperfusion, which means there's a decrease in blood supply in the whole body, such as when your body is in shock. If you've lost a lot of blood, or if you're so sick that your blood vessels get really large and they dilate, you can go, that's what we call being in shock. And the reason they dilate is because you're so sick that your body is trying to send all the good blood to your internal organs where it's important. So that gets diverted from the brain, and that is something that we call shock. Now, if all that blood is leaving the brain, then you can have lack of blood flow to the brain by way of systemic hypoperfusion. You don't need a clot. So clots can block the blood flow and deprive the brain of oxygen, but so can shock. So those are the three blood clot ways and one hypoperfusion way of how you can have ischemic strokes. Now, the signs and symptoms of ischemic strokes are variable. Anyone can have any kind of stroke depending on what part of the brain is affected. The more common ones that you have is hemiplegia, or weakness of one side or the other. You can have weakness of the face, what we call nasolabial fold flattening, where you have a facial droop. You can have numbness. You can have reduction in sensory or vibratory sensation. You can have drooping of the eyelids, balance problems. You can have trouble speaking. Can have garbled speech, trouble walking. So all of those things are possible. If you're suspecting that someone is having a stroke, one good thing to know is the FAST criteria, which is used by the Stroke Association. It is really helpful for diagnosing strokes. And also, if you're suspicious that someone's having a stroke, even if you're not sure, definitely get to the emergency room because there is clot busting therapy called tPA that someone can be a candidate for if they present to the hospital before 4.5 hours. Now, of course, there's also surgical interventions that can be done, but those are only good for a certain amount of time as well. So time is brain. You have to get someone to the hospital when you first suspect it, and I think, everyone will do better. Now, what does the FAST acronym stand for? F is for facial drooping, A is for arm weakness, S is for speech difficulties, and T is time. So that's the FAST criteria. The time portion of it is important, again, for that clot busting therapy that I had mentioned. Now, treatments of stroke, obviously, if you can get someone to the hospital sooner rather than later, you're going to have a lot more success in terms of acutely treating a stroke. But if a stroke has already happened and there's nothing to reverse it, then there are certain things we can do to keep the damage from spreading. For instance, we can watch the blood pressures. We admit someone to the ICU or the neurology unit to do frequent assessments. We can figure out why this stroke happened in the first place. So there's some labs that we draw. We get an echocardiogram to check the heart. We get blood vessel imaging to check the blood vessels. We check their cholesterol, their diabetes risk factors, make sure that their medications are optimized to prevent this from happening again. Of course, if it's a huge stroke and the person is debilitated, they will likely go to rehab. And how they do while they're in rehab is going to really depend on the age of the person, the size of the stroke, and how quickly it was treated. So there are a lot of things that go into that. We'll definitely, I can make a whole different episode about the stroke workup, but I think the key points are stroke happens. It's common. It can be difficult to identify, but if you're ever concerned, time is brain, just call 911. Most EMSs have stroke alerts because we can only give medication during a certain period of time. Doing that, I think, will be extremely helpful. So that is it for ischemic stroke. If this was helpful, let me know, and we'll be back in next week or in 2 weeks with hemorrhagic stroke. I probably will also discuss TIA, the stroke workup, and just anything else that you guys might have questions with, let me know. Thank you so much for your time and have a great week.
How do you know my?